Baby Kong. Okay.
Yeah, because he's not quite grown up yet.
Oh, I thought that was his normal size. Okay.
They said he's not fully grown yet.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he's not a baby, but okay. I'm calling
a baby. Gotcha.
Did anybody watch Skull of Kong Island?
I did.
Yeah, I did like it. I didn't
think I did. I didn't retain that he hadn't grown up yet.
And I vaguely remember that going, oh, that's how they're going to justify how big he's going to be to fight Godzilla. Right. Okay.
Baby Kong.
All I can remember is somebody drew a picture of Godzilla with one of those baby things, the papoose or whatever, and it's got King Kong in it, and Godzilla had shades, and he was just kind of like arms akimbo with baby King Kong.
That's adorable.
So
that's right. I did see Skull Kong Island because they did set up the Godzilla fight at the end.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Kong Kong Skull Kong Island.
The next movie was supposed to be Godzilla versus Kong.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know, this guy, and maybe you haven't either, but he's never seen the original Willis O'Brien. RKO 1938.
I've only seen clips, you know, the Kongs on the Empire Strikes Building. Yeah. Empire Strikes.
It's really short, isn't it? Like 20 minutes or something?
It's like an hour 10 because they didn't make movies very long back then.
My brain doesn't remember it.
It's not very long.
I've seen it, but.
But yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to Peter Jackson's 3.5 hour.
Just edit this into a podcast because it's pretty good.
You need to start rolling.
I've been rolling.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. Have that be the. This is the start point.
Podcast. Okay. It's all right. Before the podcast.
Did you start with baby?
Baby Kong doo doo.
Yeah.
Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comic Central. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Baby Cole Hornaday. Baby Chris Casso.
Call it the Kongcast.
Hey! And baby Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
How is everybody this fine evening?
Great.
Kongerific.
We were just talking about Kong Skull Island.
Just talking about my man Kong.
Watch your mouth.
Oh, lordy, lordy.
Yeah. We love our Kong.
I appreciate all the kaiju who just don't want to be bothered, you know? Yeah. They just want to live a peaceful life.
They're all Hulk.
It's the stupid humans that are like, get off my lawn, you know?
You know, the thing
get
about the American Godzillas that I do appreciate is they are saying, these creatures existed before us, now they're coming back to all these reasons. And it sort of from the jump says, Godzilla is the champion, always has been the champion. Because, you know, if you look at the entire history of Godzilla, it's kind of confusing. It's like, okay, when can I drop in on which movie arc or which series arc? Is he a good guy? When is he a bad guy?
There's also the one where he's the amalgamation of all the dead souls of people the Japanese killed.
Right.
Right. You're like, does this count?
We were debating about what that was. I thought that was just Tokyo SOS, but it's not.
Yeah, that it's one that has like a name of like three monsters that get shortened, and that's the name.
Oh, yes, it's Godzilla, Mothra. It's not Ghidorah.
It's Ghidorah. Ghidorah is the hero.
That's right. Yeah. All out attack. Is it? I think it might be all out attack.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Come back to Kongcast, and we'll get
our Kongcast will answer these hard press questions.
Yeah.
Yes. But
somebody out there knows, and they can correct us.
Email us at perfectbombpodcast@gmail.com.
Or if you're Corey and you listen to this, we have a customer that loves Godzilla. Just call
us. Tell us. Yeah.
Just tell us. Excellent. All right. Well, back in 1921, there was an incident that happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma. The Tulsa Race Massacre, in which Tulsa's affluent Greenwood District was burned to the ground by a horde of racist white folks, killing hundreds of innocent black people in the process and injuring arguably even more. We've spoken about this in the past. Well, it was also the jumping off point for the HBO series Watchmen, a spinoff of the popular comic.
Mm-hmm.
And some are saying, although who knows if this is true, that due to increased awareness of this event, Oklahoma, which has not previously taught about this event in public schools, mm-hmm. is now including it in the curriculum.
Mm-hmm. The HBO did a really, really interesting way of marketing the show in that they did comics that were about the slaughter on Black Wall Street. But they also had some legit historical articles that you didn't realize were actually linked you back to information about the TV show, which was a little bit backhanded advertising, but all the history they were talking about in it was genuine. Mm-hmm. And I really loved that a lot. And the way that that show caught me so off guard and taught me so many things, that's the only regret I have about whether that show's going to continue. It's like, if you're going to continue, promise me that you approach it the same way again.
Right.
You know, if it means looking at more historical events that we've buried, or recognition, you know, I don't know. But that, I just think that show was extraordinary.
And anyway. It's really amazing the power of something that's supposed to be fictitious,
right,
like, based off of these events that has now brought about real awareness.
First there was the mass graves. Right. You know, it was like about 2 or 3 weeks after the show originally aired, they said, you know, they've discovered all these mass graves outside of town. And I was like, they've always known those mass graves are there. It's just that now white people care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure that there are families in that community, there are community members who've always known where those graves were. It was not forgotten. It can't possibly be forgotten by the ancestors of the black members of that community. But now they've been put in the public eye and recognized. Mm-hmm. So
it is what Senator Kevin Matthews calls Tulsa's dirty secret, and they probably did not include it in curriculum because they don't want, you know, they just want to leave the past in the past.
That's not how you do secret?
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyway, I mean, again, because now children are aware of it, and they will be asking about it in school.
Right.
So they are coming this fall. Coming this fall. that's going to be included in curriculum for elementary through high school in schools in Tulsa, at least, I'm sure, in the rest of the state soon to come. Hmm. Yeah, so the power of comic books and good storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Dexter Vines has a GoFundMe to treat some medical costs. He was diagnosed with cancer, and his friends are trying to help him out. Dexter Vines, I have never heard of him before I saw this article.
Inked Ed McGuinness's artwork for the longest time. Mm-hmm. I think he might still do it. And so, like, Ed McGuinness is well known for doing a huge Deadpool run, a lot of DC Superman stuff with, like, Jeff Loeb, I think.
Right.
And so I'm pretty sure Dexter Vines was his go-to guy most of the time. So,
yeah, that's what it says here. He also inked portions of Terry Dodson's upcoming X-Men Fantastic Four number one. Mm-hmm. He went to the doctor for chronic lower back pain and found out that he had 2 fractured vertebrae in his lower back and that they were the result of multiple myeloma, a cancer that attacks the plasma of the blood.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, if you have any pains, go check that out at the doctor, friends.
Why are you looking at me? I'm old and creaky. Just don't look at me that way.
Specifically. Anyway, a link to the GoFundMe will be in the show notes. They're looking to raise $25,000. And good luck to Mr. Vines. And that is all the terrible news we have to talk about today on the show. Switching gears considerably, Tenacious D, sort of aggro punk experimental band. Headlined by Jack Black and Kyle Gass. They're going to do a comic book called Post Apocalypto. It's going to be a graphic novel. Kyle and Jack are going to co-write it, and Jack Black is going to draw it. And there is preview art, and it looks like something Jack Black would draw. Yes. They'd look like child's drawings.
Aww.
Still something better than I could do.
Hey, yeah.
It'll fit with a bunch of other underground art styles.
Yeah.
You know, so.
It's going to be entirely hand-drawn by Black. A 180-page full-color graphic novel. We'll see the band explore a post-apocalyptic hellscape, unsurprisingly, and battle all new forms of evil mutations in the wake of an atomic blast, as well as visit space in the White House. And, I may be interested to read this. There's a few preview panels of the opening pages, and it looks like he did it in MS Paint, but nothing against that. It looks pretty charming, actually.
Good.
And I enjoyed Tenacious D.
Yes.
And Fantagraphics, local heroes, Fantagraphics right. will be producing.
It kind of reminds me of home movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
All right. Transformers just can't get enough of other properties these days. I'm digging it.
They're sharing space.
Yeah. I saw we're going to talk about Transformers My Little Pony, but just to backtrack, the Terminator one's about to come out, and I just saw the solicitation for the second issue.
Yes.
And it actually looks like it could be good.
Did the first issue not look like it could be good?
It didn't say enough about it. I didn't have an idea. The second one is like Skynet sends a Terminator back in time to save the world from the Cybertronians. I'm like, what?
How does that work? Well, but, you know, I just saw Terminator Dark Fate, and Skynet doesn't exist anymore.
No.
That was their retcon thing, was that future never happened, and now that's a new cybernetic threat, and they, you know, they have these cool Terminators they send back to...
It's Amazon.
Yeah, and I can't remember, they were like Revolution, short for Revolution something, Revolution 9, Rev 9, I don't know. And I'm like, this is just a terrible way to try to reboot this franchise.
So they need to find Doctor Strange with the time thing so he can look into which future is the one that doesn't have a cybernetic problem.
Which doesn't have a Terminator movie that sucks.
All right, we're talking about Terminator.
It might turn into a slice of life comedy then at that point.
It'll be the reality where the Terminators meet My Little Pony. I got us back.
There we go. Oh boy! So
which
yeah,
is not a far stretch from Dark Fate, because in that one, Arnie is a recovered Terminator who is a drapery installer. I am not kidding you guys.
I thought he was going to say he's a brony.
No, so. Basically the comment is that Arnie the T2 has been emasculated in some way. I mean,
so is his cutie mark just like curtains or something?
Do you want blinds or drapes? I've got to get something from my truck, but I'll be back.
I can't get these shutters to work.
Cheesy, Ben. It was that cheesy.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's got to be seen to be believed. Anyway, sorry. Terminator and My Little Pony.
No, it's Transformers and My Little Pony, but Terminator and My Little Pony.
I'll give it time.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, yeah, Transformers, IDW.
Terminator, RoboCop, and My Little Pony.
Yes. Why not just all of them? Mm-hmm. Just cut the pages up, put them together.
Yes.
It's coming from IDW. It's going to be a four-part crossover where evil Queen Chrysalis, casting a spell to try to find changeling allies, but inadvertently interfering with a distant Cybertron space bridge, bringing the Autobots and Decepticons to Equestria. Twilight Sparkle, Optimus Prime, and more will have to work together to overcome the menace of malevolent magic and machinery.
So they already actually did a little bit of a crossover, because there was the G.I. Joe Transformers crossover, and at the end of it, Megatron fell through a black hole, and he was trying to find Unicron, but they ended with a panel saying, instead of Unicron, he found Unicorn. And he's like in a grassy meadow with all these magical things. And like the narrator is like, indeed, friendship is magic. And Megatron just looks like he's tired and done with life.
Starscream!
We just live in the perfect mashing up reality.
What is it with our, it just seems to me, and maybe it's just because I like Transformers and I pay attention to them, but it just seems that there are so many crossover events. Is this just a gimmick that is just going to keep on going, or what's so special about it?
As long as they have the licenses.
See, I'm gonna refer back to a Patton Oswalt article from Wired magazine from almost 20 years ago, where he predicted all of this. And the article is called Wake Up Popular Culture, Time to Die. Wake Up Nerd Culture, Time to Die. But he predicted that with the internet, with this access to so much information simultaneously, that we're not going to be seeing boundaries or borders in our storytelling anymore, that it's going to merge. And we've already seen it. So yeah, it's a cute gimmick, but also it's, I think what he was saying, and I agree with him, is that it's inevitable.
Well, they're running out of ideas.
Well, they're running out of ideas, but also everything is just bleeds over into itself in our pop, biosphere.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I have a hard time believing. Yeah, I'm on the fence about the whole panic of running out of ideas because they go in waves.
Sure.
They go in waves, but we're going to be living in a reality that's permanently mashed up pretty soon.
It's some sort of horrible pop culture Shoggoth creature.
Sure.
That's yes. All these heads of, like, you know, here's Optimus Prime and My Little Pony and all these things. And it's just kind of like.
But who's not to say that, you know, Didio and DC's constant need to reboot, rebirth, afterbirth is not some trying to figure out how to renegotiate this sphere of pop culture storytelling as it bleeds into itself. You know, it's like participating and resisting at the same time. Am I getting too intellectual with this?
No, but the title of the article is called Wake Up Geek Culture, Time to Die,
okay.
From Wired Magazine.
Which I highly recommend because I love Patton Oswalt as an intellectual, not just as a comedian and a storyteller and an actor, but he knows what he's talking about. I go dig up that article. I think you'd be pleasantly surprised by what he had to say.
Yeah. All right, so Transformers Meet the Ponies.
Mm-hmm.
All righty.
I just want to know who Starscream's going to betray.
I would just throw out a pony name, but I have no idea what they are. Toho, the studio which made Godzilla a household name, is planning a Godzilla cinematic universe for 2021. This isn't breaking news, but it's news that has recently come to our attention
because we're slow learners.
And I'm looking forward to it. It's a franchise that will live on as a series of solo movies starring monsters like King Ghidorah and Mothra. Modern Mothra movies. Maybe Gamera will have a second chance at life.
Well, that's
to be his first chance.
Yeah, that's Dai. That's not Toho, but
yeah. But we just said that, you know, all the
it's all bleeding together.
Right. They're all bleeding together. Right.
But I got to tell you, those late 90s, early 2000s is a trilogy of Gamera movies, and I think they are great.
I love those because he stepped on the subway station and killed everybody.
Yeah,
jeez. That's what happens when the giant turtle walks into the city.
That's right. But then they did these cute ones that came after that were really annoying.
I didn't see those.
Yeah. No, there's one where a little boy finds a little Gamera egg and raises this cute little Muppet Gamera, and he, you know, and then he becomes once again the friend of children everywhere.
Oh.
But that's not the way he is in this Gamera Guardian of the Universe trilogy, which is like flames and blood and gore and, and poop. There's poop in it.
Also some tentacles in some weird way. But
I didn't realize that Gamera had a 21st century.
I will loan it to you. I didn't get the whole trilogy, but I have the first one because I think it's really, really fun.
I'm over
the brutal one.
You can also go down to your local movie store, the Scarecrow video, and probably put down a $200 deposit. But
I don't think it's streaming anywhere.
No, probably not.
Well, I mean, I'm only familiar with Gamera through the Mystery Science Theater version.
The Olympic gymnast, Gamera.
Yes. Well, yeah. Gamera is really neat. He is full of turtle meat.
Yes.
We've been eating Gamera. Jeez. Gamera. Oh, come on, kids.
I can't remember it.
They do the bouncing ball thing. They teach you the song, for pity's sake.
I haven't seen any Gamera, so I'm apparently missing out.
Anyway, back to the Godzilla cinematic universe.
No, yeah, Godzilla. That's right. We were talking about that.
On a tangent cast today.
It's a thing that's going to happen. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to happen in 2021. It's being referred to as a World of Godzilla, but there's a Godzilla anime trilogy on Netflix, which is in my queue, but I have not watched yet.
Chris liked it. I was bored to.
You didn't? We're talking about the horrible CGI one.
The animated series?
Yeah, I can't even.
It's like one, two, and three.
I couldn't even sit down the first 2 minutes of it.
Really?
This
is one where the humans leave the Earth. They've been in a space station.
Yeah, I cannot physically look at it.
It's that bad animation that's been becoming really popular, right?
Oh, I thought you liked it, and I disappointed you by saying I thought it sucked and it bored me to death.
No, I couldn't even watch it because I hate that style.
Man.
All right. I won't watch it.
Misremembering things.
Get it out of your queue. That's where things go to die anyway.
Let's see, I'm honest to Pete, man. I thought I was feeling badly. Like, I need to give this another chance because I think Chris liked it.
No.
Anyway, we don't need to dwell on things Chris does or does not like. Let's move on to Book Report, everybody.
That's how we learn, Ben.
That's our Chris cast later.
Cole Hornaday, what do you want to tell us about?
Oh, gosh. I'm going to talk about the new iteration of Marvel's X by Alex Ross, Jim Krieger, and Welby. So the whole Earth X Marvel's project is kind of forgotten now, and it ran for a long time. And there were three different. This was back in the 90s, right?
Earth Universe Paradise.
Yes.
Yeah.
Earth X Paradise X. Earth X Universe X Paradise X, and then a bunch of spinoffs.
Yeah. Within each one, there's like a ton of spinoffs. Yeah.
So basically, the genesis of the whole Earth X thing was like a what if alternate future. It's a very dark, grim, and gritty future of the Marvel Universe.
It's Kingdom Come.
It came about from a cool little sketchbook that Alex Ross did as an insert for Wizard magazine back in the mid to late 90s. Yeah. I'm looking at you to hope that I'm getting this right. And it was pretty cool because, you know, Alex Ross is kind of a genius illustrator, and his photorealistic illustrations, thank you, friends, are really fascinating. So, and it was this alternate universe for, like, you know, the Hulk and Bruce Banner were separated, and Bruce Banner was a little boy, and the Hulk was this kind of like dumb gorilla, but they had this sympathetic relationship where they couldn't be separated, and Thor had been turned into a woman, and the Submariner had been cursed by Franklin Richards, so he was always on fire and he had to stay underwater. So it was really a fanboy project.
Yes.
That was cool because it was a couple of cool pictures.
And then it dragged on.
And then they decided they were going to turn it into three series. And I think it got to the point, I was reading an interview with Krieger a while back, that the editorial at Marvel finally said, you guys got to wrap this up because this is accomplishing nothing. And it really didn't. It offered up one solution to the origin of the Marvel Universe, which was that it was all started by the Aesir, who are actually aliens. The Norse gods are actually aliens. And Odin was a lost and forgotten and amnesiac alien and not really a god. Am I remembering this correctly?
I gave up. Let's see if this one's okay.
So it's a little bit of a shock and surprise when I see that they've, like, they're trying to reboot this series with Marvel's X, and it's the same story, but the first issue starts out, the other crux of the whole story is that everybody becomes a superhero.
Right.
And it's a world where you're an anomalous being if you don't have a superpower.
Right.
And that plunges the world into chaos, and the people who are superheroes are, are left to try to help clean up the mess, but everybody else is in. So this is a story about this little boy and his family the other main part of the story is that Black Bolt releases the Terrigen Mists, and that's why everybody becomes superheroes, which we kind of did in regular continuity. Right. There's a lot of stuff in this that, all right. So it really just created more confusion than it helped. This book is going back to the beginning of the Earth X story that Ross and Krieger started decades ago, but now it's telling it from the perspective of a non-powered human child. He's lost his family, his sister, his mom, and his dad were killed by scavengers. Grandma died in the process of transmuting, but his older sister turned into a being of light with energy wings and flew away. So he's all on his own, and he wears a Green Goblin mask in public to basically hide the fact that he's normal. I've always thought Jim Krieger was a decent writer. It just, like, somebody needed to rein him in. When he started out as a writer in the 90s, he wrote this really cool book for Dark Horse called Foot Soldiers. Mm. It was a post-apocalyptic reality where these kids who are kind of scavengers dig up the graves of these superheroes and find all their high-tech equipment and go out and try to start saving the world in rags and tatters. And, you know, and I thought that was a kind of a fresh take on a lot of things. I never thought he was a bad writer. It's just like, you know, man, these guys are off the rails with this stuff. And my concern is that they're trying to go back decades later and try to recapitulate.
Yeah.
And I was curious. I was interested. But I also had to spend way too long on Wikipedia trying to remember what happened in the original one. And I don't know if it's going to be worth your trouble.
So do you feel like you, when you were jumping into this, did you do the research beforehand? Is it kind of a new reader friendly? Or?
It is new reader friendly.
Okay.
It is new reader friendly. But since this is not, but since we're going back to the egg, also, they're going to be reprinting all of that Earth X stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All of that's up for
They're reprint. Obsessed with Alex Ross and Kirby Sayak right now. They're really getting behind it. And it's kind of like, I don't get it, but okay.
And my concern is that, you know, it may lose momentum really fast and we may not see a conclusion to all the stuff they have planned because it like I said, it went off the rails a long time ago.
Yeah. So.
Marvel's X.
Cool, and it's got the character with the Green Goblin mask on the cover.
And a beautiful Alex Ross cover.
All I can think of when I see that is the main bad truck in Overdrive.
It's the Green Goblin. Yeah. I never understood how, but it is.
Yeah.
It elicits that memory. Mm-hmm. Cool, Marvel's X. Thank you, Cole. Nicole.
People getting run down by a truck.
Nicole, what do you got for us?
So I've been trying to read a little bit more indie stuff. I'm catching up. This is an 2-year-old book, I think, at this point. Coyote Dog Girl by Lisa Hannawalt.
I know that name.
Yes.
She also wrote My Dirty Dumb Eyes and Hot Dog Taste Test. And she
Bojack Horseman.
She's the art director. The person who came up with the characters.
Yeah. So you'll see that art in here. Mm-hmm. Wow. It makes total sense. Mm-hmm. This is like an indie angry girl cowboy story.
Okay.
Yeah. So it follows this girl, Coyote Dog Girl. She is a humanoid dog person. She has a horse named Red, who she loves very much. And she is being chased by a bunch of people. You find out that she was assaulted by the general store guy she used to shop from in the middle of the night. Mm. And she cut his leg up into little fillets, and then his brother and bandits started running after her to try to seek vengeance, even though this guy was obviously not great. And she finds a bunch of native people who are more like wolf-like, and they take her in, they take care of her. She was shot with arrows, and she runs around, makes some friends, and that's pretty much it. It's pretty simple, and I don't know. I enjoyed it. It was great for what it is. Really great colors, like watercolor, you know, work and stuff. So really pretty art. It's just really, you know, sassy stuff where she's like, that's stupid, meh, and then she runs off. Like, there's just a lot of dialogue like that. So that's why I'm like, angry indie girl. There you go. Perfect. Yeah. This seemed to have, like, a lot of, excitement around it when it came out. I guess hype or something like that.
What doesn't have hype?
Yeah.
But this is an indie book, so.
But did they get Keanu Reeves to write a pull quote for it?
Whoa.
It's published by Drawn and Quarterly. I mean, it's totally, you know, an indie jam. I think it was well done. Like I said, the colors are really great. It's a small hardcover. I don't know how much it costs. I don't know. It's
a library book.
It costs money that you pay somebody for. And
but you got it from the library.
Yeah, sometimes when I go visit the island of Ballard, I go pop into the library and then I just go look at their comics. It's how I read My Pretty Vampire by Kelly Skelly. I don't know. That's not her name. I always want to call her Kelly Skelly.
That sounds almost right.
It's close.
Yeah. It's approximate knowledge.
It's approximate. Anyway, that's it.
Cool. Coyote Dog Girl from Lisa Hannawalt. Thank you, Nicole. And finally, Chris Casso, what do you got for us?
So I'm not going to get too deep because I don't want to do spoilers because Cole hasn't read this yet. It just came out this week.
Well, as I said off mic, I'm not going to remember anyway, so.
Well, we'll see how I do.
Okay.
The reason I want to talk about it is because I read it 3 times last night.
Dude.
And I believe this is, to me, what I have rarely come across is an example of a perfect issue in that when it comes down to how I kind of like look at how well a comic pulls something off, mm-hmm. is that I break it down to the construction of it, to the balance of subplots and characterization and every little aspect, and how well it builds upon itself, and if you can do it in a small amount of time. And so the quick summary is that this returns to the idea of talking about what death means to the X-Men now, which is interesting because I feel that there's a lot of potential kind of horror stories you could talk about that, and existential horror stories. Mm-hmm. And it gives a lot of interesting talk about religion because one of the focal characters is Nightcrawler, who is a priest. And they've changed their world so much that he has to question everything now. And it brings up all these little sub-ideas that were seeded in House of X in the back matter about how do the mutants look at the Scarlet Witch? How do they look at the No More Mutants? And again, what does death mean? What is Apocalypse's role in a lot of stuff? And one of the other things I want to mention is that I'm generally not a big fan of Lionel Francis Yu. I think he's too static. But in this issue, like he knew what to do. He was given the right directions. And he gave some very interesting, subtle facial features to people like Apocalypse, where you can almost read, like, actual sense of like joy or like, you know, community from a mass murdering genocidal immortal. So there's like levels happening in this issue. There's a quick sequence where Cyclops is wandering through the forest and he sees Douglas Ramsey of the New Mutants talking to Warlock. And also Krakoa is there, the face of Krakoa. And it feels like I'm watching or reading watching The Shining, because like something's wrong and you have to like dissect the scene and you'll notice there's something off and weird. So there's always a sense of like discontent in this world, which is what Nightcrawler is talking about, because he just can't quite make things work with his view of God. And maybe he's not supposed to. And all of the Hickman House of X always felt weirdly off, because I think we're supposed to feel uncomfortable because this is a culture that is going to replace us, be it violently or not. And we're not necessarily supposed to be feeling okay about this, even though they are in the right. So yeah, it hit a lot of things for me. And I think a lot of people might be slowing down on some of the X-Men books because of all the oversaturation. But I think if you stick to the core Hickman book, you'll hit these notes where you're like, oh, you're doing something very interesting. And even the cover, upon looking at it, the whole book is about kind of like, what about God? What about religion? And Apocalypse is shattering a stained glass window of Nightcrawler. It's just like, damn, every level of this worked for me. So I haven't felt that way about a superhero book in a while. And it's just like, damn, Hickman. So yeah, it's like well worth it. If you've been losing steam, just go read the core title. Go back and read House of X. Get your way to this one. Because like number one of X-Men was like, all right. Number two is like, I don't care. Number three is like little old ladies as villains. Ha! And then number four, five, and six were a little bit more interesting. And like, oh, that subplot about Mystique. But now number seven's like, right, the stuff I want to talk about. What about this whole death thing? And what does it mean? Like, are you really you if the thing they recreate is just your memories? What about your soul? Hmm. And nobody online talked about it. I've only talked about it with some customers because I had to bring it up, because I feel that's a really good existential horror story, because it's like, is your soul different than your memories? And Nightcrawler asks that question. Mm, I'm like, thank you, Hickman. I knew you were going there.
That's cool, because it's such a weird concept to be like, we could just bring you back and just pump you back into this body. Hey, and it's just like, are we not going to talk about how weird that is?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and it's just kind of like, is the thing that you were actually dead, or is the new thing that is you actually you? You know, so it gets into that. I'm glad that wasn't just glossed over or forgotten. So yes, I kind of really loved it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Cool. X-Men number 7. Thank you, Chris. Well, that is Book Report. That is our show. Coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by the Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comic Extension here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And our friends, get your quiz at. On his quiz time this week, the questions come to us from Mr. Cole Hornaday.
Oh, crud. Okay. I thought I had another episode to go. Okay, so I did a scary thing this week, Kat. Since we have been doing quiz time and this show for so long, I wrote an entire quiz time of stuff I've already done.
Okay.
With no recollection.
Wow.
And then I was like, wait a second, that little bit that I just cut and paste from Wikipedia sounds familiar. And I went and looked it up, and sure enough, episode 174 was my quiz time was about Jungle Queens. And because I'm working on it, you know. So, and that's kind of an indication of how long I've been working on this Panel Jumper episode about Jungle Queens.
So long.
Anyway, so all goes to say that I came up with this a little bit last minute, so please forgive me. This quiz time is dedicated to characters defined by malicious medullas, sinister cerebrums, and loathsome prefrontal lobes. I call it Bad Brains. This member of the Brotherhood of Evil found himself called to experiment on animals in order to raise their IQs. His greatest success was with a gorilla who he names Monsieur Mala, or Monsieur Mala. Caught in an explosion ignited by his arch rival, only the villain's brain survives. Rescued by the ape counterpart, who eventually becomes this character's one true love. Name that character for me, please.
The Brain.
The Brain. The Brain first appeared in DC's Doom Patrol number 86 in March 1964, and I found this really great anecdote. It was created by Arnold Drake and Bruno Premiani. Drake later commented, I used that same concept in a Jerry Lewis comic book and in a Bob Hope comic. I had a totem pole that talked to him. Oftentimes, I write the same storylines for the comedy stuff that I write for the serious stuff. I just turned it on its head.
Yeah.
No, okay. Now, please name... Yes, I know. I felt the same way, but we're going to move on now. Please name this former First Lady featured in the 1953 sci-fi flick Donovan's Brain, about an evil billionaire whose brain is put in a vat only to later develop the ability to mentally control those around him. Former First Lady.
Actual First Lady or made up First Lady?
Actual First Lady.
1950s?
1953. The movie is Donovan's Brain.
Jackie?
God, no.
Nancy?
Yes, thank you. Watching him struggle over here was really painful. Yeah, Nancy Reagan, then known as Nancy Davis.
Ah.
Featured in the film Donovan's Brain. Okay, moving on. This nasty animated specimen was originally inspired by the benevolent aliens known as the Utroms, a.k.a. the TCRI aliens, featured in very early print episodes of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and were reportedly responsible for creating the famous mutagen. And please name this character who was retooled for TV to become what iconic supervillain?
Krang.
Krang. Krang's ally Shredder built him a humanoid exosuit in whose tummy the disembodied brain creature resides. Krang first appeared in the TMNT episode Enter the Shredder, which aired December 15th, 1987. Okay.
We're getting old.
Yes, so. This, let's see, this would-be evil genius would be the more intelligent but not necessarily wiser half of a duo of genetically enhanced laboratory mice who regularly escape from their incarceration at the Acme Labs research facility.
The Brain.
The Brain.
Were we all
Pinky
singing
in the brain.
It in our head? Yeah, I think you were bobbing along.
Pinky and the Brain originally aired on September 9th, 1995, and ran until November 14th, 1998. Okay, wrapping it up. Lastly, this one's going to be multiple choice. I'm going to give you a film scenario, and you must pick the correct film from the following list. Here is the film. This drive-in creature feature features the alien terrorist Gore, a disembodied alien brain who comes to Earth to control the population with its psychic powers. Please identify the film from the following list. The Thing That Couldn't Die from 1958, The Fiend Without a Face from 1958, They Saved Hitler's Brain from 1968, The Man with Two Brains from 1983, or The Brain from the Planet Arrus from 1957.
I know it's not The Man with Two Brains, and that's as far as my knowledge will take me.
Is it Arrus?
It is Arrus, The Brain from Planet Arrus. All of these are all the ones from the 50s, the drive-in movies are all terrible, and they frequently show them all on Comet. But The Brain from Planet Arrus is truly, truly a gem, because it's this giant brain with this brain stem that he hovers around in these really bad.
Didn't she kill it with an axe or something?
I think she killed it with an axe, yep.
All right. Yep.
Well, thank you, Cole.
You're welcome.
And thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.